Hey there, Merry Christmas. We are in the middle of the holiday season, and I don't know about you, but there's so much I love about it, and then there's so much that can also be hard about it. And so I just wanted to bring you some interesting conversations at Christmas time every week. And so if you haven't subscribed, make sure you subscribe, and this podcast will be in your inbox every single week. And it's a great way for you to have just that weekly reminder on Wednesdays. It'll pop in there and it will challenge you and grow you and encourage you and inspire you. So make sure you go and subscribe. And today I got to interview Taylor Simpson. He's a pastor of New Song Church in the Pacific Northwest. And Taylor is married. He has several kids. Just found out he has a kid named Willow. So there's that. Super funny. Anyways, we had a good conversation where in some ways Taylor just scrapped the cute, nostalgic Christmas nativity scene that we're all comfortable with and kind of challenged us on some things about this idea of God being with us. Is actually, it can be terrifying and it can be fear invoking and sometimes offensive and call us to some hard things. And so if you need to grow in your faith and you need a challenge, this is a great conversation to listen to and wrestle with. So take a listen. Taylor, it is so fun to have you on the podcast today. I know so many people who love you and respect you and have told me you got to have this pastor on the podcast. So today's the day. It's good to be with you.
I am so excited to be here, Willow. Love you. Love the Collide team, and excited to get some time.
Yeah, well, I love it. We're hopping on in the middle of the Christmas season. So as per usual, I'm sure that our listeners are in the hustle and bustle and the crazy and the expectations and the pressure and all the things that this season sort of tackles and puts on us. And, you know, the family dysfunction comes out like crazy and, you know, all the things. So I want to talk to you about how in the midst of all of that, do we really lean into this Emmanuel, God with us? And you're someone, I mean, people would maybe call you a professional Christian. Like, you get paid to tell people about this Emmanuel at Christmas. And they might think, oh, well, a pastor, of course a pastor is going to, you know, tell me that Jesus is the reason for the season. But can you tell us a little bit about why the Christmas season, what does it mean to you as a person that it would mean to you if you weren't a pastor, if you weren't doing Christmas Eve services, if you weren't a quote unquote paid professional that had to tell people about Jesus at Christmas?
Yeah. Okay. So I would say, number one, I was enjoying a personal transformational relationship with Jesus long before anybody called me pastor. And I think that that is part of the hope of the Christmas story, is this is God incarnating himself, right? So this is Isaiah 9, you know, like the most quintessential Christmas text. You've got, for to us, a child is born, to us, a son is given. This is this is God becoming human. We see his nature displayed in the four names following in verse 6, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. That this means that God can be known, that I can actually know who God is. I can have firsthand experiential knowledge of who he is in my life personally. I love the line in there that he shall be called. And the question is, by who? Who is going to call God these things? And that's, of course, us. As we're brought into the family of God through the gospel, that we actually get to experience the nature of God as Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. So I think it means that we can, we were just talking, Willow, before we went live here. And I think so often the Christmas story gets reduced to just a cute nativity scene, right? It's like you got the shepherds, you got, you know, the wise men bringing the gold and the frankincense, and it's quaint, it's cute, it's non-threatening, it's kind of benign. It doesn't rub up against me and my life in any way. Mm-hmm. And it's nostalgic for us. But I think it comes with incredible hope that actually says, no, this is God actually come to reveal himself to us, and God can be known, that the guessing game is out, right? So this is not, Christianity is not about vague spiritualism. It's not about Eastern New Age worldview, philosophy. God is spirit. He is the universe. And we're sort of bumbling around to try to figure out who he is and what he's like. This is God has incarnated himself in Jesus, and we can know who he is, and we can be in relationship with him. The guessing game is now gone. And of course, insert the rest of the life of Jesus, and we get to see why we really actually want to be in relationship with this incredible God-man that lived the perfect life that I couldn't, that died the death that I deserve for my sin on the cross, and made a way for me to be reconciled to my creator, who has now been, who's become through the gospel, my father, wonderful counselor, prince of peace, and so much more. So I think it's amazing that we get to have relationship with Jesus through the Christmas story, and that the guessing game is gone. And we get to experience the realness of God in our lives through the Christmas story.
I love that you are bringing up this idea that this isn't just a cute nostalgic story. And I love these words you're saying, the guessing game is out. What did that mean for you when you talk about, oh man, like the Christmas story for me isn't because I'm a paid pastor that I have to tell people, but it actually means something to me that the guessing game is out. When you think back to when you first ran into Jesus, we talk about colliding with Jesus all the time. When you first began to collide with him and realize that I don't have to guess what God is like, I can look and see what he's like in Jesus. What was that like for you when you started to first really realize that?
It was terrifying, Willow, because because what God did is he began to contradict me. I'm sure you've experienced that before, right? Where all of a sudden when I realized that what I'd been taught my whole life by Western culture, that, you know, like I can essentially, I can be my own God, my own source of truth. It's kind of one of our cultural ideas right now that I think are very damaging and very bad, that truth is subjective and your truth is your truth and my truth is my truth. And, you can kind of decide to believe whatever you want about, objective reality and how you want to live your life. What God did when I met Jesus was he began to contradict me, and in some really intense ways. And I had a choice in that moment. And I think this is what the Christmas story does, is it forces a crisis of faith for us to say, am I going to abandon this disposition of the self-God, where I am God and governor of my own life, the arbiter of truth and morality? And am I going to abandon that and opt into, no. Okay, Jesus is the king. Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us. He's God incarnate. And he began to contradict me. So I realized, okay, well, like I'm a sinner, for, which is very offensive. And that's another idea that we don't have in our culture. In fact, the only sin in our culture is not being true to yourself. It's not affirming yourself. And here Jesus comes around in the call of the gospel. The Christmas story culminated as a call is deny yourself, pick up your cross and follow me. And so I think the entry point to this whole thing called Christianity is we have to actually dethrone self as God and embrace Jesus as God, the one to whom the government of all is going to be on his shoulders and never increasing, again, referencing the Isaiah 9 Christmas passage right there. So I would say the moment was, it was great and terrifying. Because I realized that God does exist and he is real and he has made himself known through the person and work of Jesus. And ultimately, I am accountable somewhere in life. And also, I think it came with a lot of immediate hope. Like there's this fear of the Lord that happens where, okay, Jesus didn't show up, you know, baby Jesus in the manger to grow up, live and die, because I am pretty close to figuring stuff out. Like this, the gospel reveals the greatness of the human need to what God had to do to solve our crisis issues. And so that's offensive, number one, but also came with a lot of hope for me because I realized that, okay, I actually don't need to try to save myself and earn favor with God because that's impossible. And it's actually received as a gift of grace through the person and the work of Jesus. So it was this dichotomy moment of great terror, great joy, you know, dread and delight. And I think that that really is what the gospel does, is it's a double-edged sword. It pierces us before it heals us. It wounds us before it heals us. It condemns us before it saves us. And I think that really was my experience.
So much to say. It's really interesting because you talked about how the Christmas story is not cute and nostalgic and just, you know, a lovely nativity scene. And you used words like terrifying, crisis, contradiction, and offensive, which is what most of us avoid in life, all of these things. And you're kind of inviting us to go, no, this is actually like, this is actually, there's a fear and there's a hope, both, right? That's what you're saying. You brought up dethroning self as God. I know we're going to move a little further into Isaiah, but I don't want to pass up that statement that you made. What does it look like to dethrone self as God?
Okay, so I think that's a great question. Much to say on that. I would say fundamentally how we tend to live our lives as human beings is that, again, I'm the arbitrator of truth and reality and morality and theology. I get to decide basically in between my 2 ears, define reality and live in accordance with whatever. The Arizona Christian University, actually, they did a worldview study. This is, I think it was a couple years ago. And what they found out, they were trying to figure out how can you describe the worldview of a modern American person? And how they described it was that of syncretism. And I think that that's really interesting because basically their findings was that the modern person is made up of a conglomeration of all of these different worldviews. We're going to take a little bit from Buddha, a little bit from Confucius, a little bit from MLK, a little bit from wherever, a little bit from Jesus, a little bit from Oprah, a little bit from, you know, Tony Robbins or whatever. And that's basically how I form the set of glasses that I view the world through. It's very personal. It's very, I'm the one that's deciding. I'm the one that is choosing. And what it means to dethrone self is I essentially take those set of glasses that I'm viewing the world through, handing them to Jesus and watching him take a sledgehammer to them and give me a new lens to actually look through the world. And so John Mark Comer, I don't know if you're probably familiar with him, mm-hmm. Amazing guy. Love his ministry and his books and his resources. He talks about this idea of trusting God with our mental maps. And the mental map is basically how we view view the world, how we view God, how we view self, how we view culture, how we view people that don't know Jesus, how I view the sin in my life, how I view my relationships. And what it means to dethrone self is I'm essentially allowing Jesus through the scripture, right, to reshift and change and reorient my mental maps. This is Paul's idea in Romans 12, right? Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. What's really interesting about that verse that's always so striking to me, the word that he uses for the transformation of the mind, it's the same word that's used in Matthew 17 when Jesus is on the Mount of Transfiguration, how he was transfigured before them. It's the same word that Paul uses, as so does the gospel writer Matthew, describing the transfiguration of Jesus. And of course, just for a brief reference, this is when Jesus takes Peter, James, and John up on the mountain. And, you know, you got Moses and Elijah showing up and his clothes start shining. And there's like, he becomes otherworldly in appearance. And this is what it means to dethrone self, is I'm allowing Jesus to take my mind and transform it so that it becomes otherworldly in appearance. And I think that that is the journey of how Christians who are effectively being discipled by Jesus, we begin to look at everything different. We look at God different. We look at ourselves different. We look at the world around us different because we're trusting our mental maps with Jesus, which there's so much to that, right? Because that means that I actually need to trust him with how I view the world, how I view God, and how I view self. So there's that dethroning, there's that demoting that needs to happen in my mind and in my heart. To where I recognize, no. Okay, this is about, we're talking about God, that God exists, that he's creator. I'm not God. I'm not creator. And I'm going to submit my way of viewing things to him and allow him to reshape how I view the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting as you're talking. It's bringing me back to when I first collided with Jesus. I was 21 years old, never been a part of a church, never went to like Christmas or Easter or anything like that. I think I maybe went to a couple church services after a slumber party or something at someone's house. But I had that experience where I think my mental maps were surrendered to someone bigger than me. And the I don't even know if this is a word, the rapidity, like how fast I changed was so crazy that I woke up one day and I was like seeing differently, living differently, talking differently. It's that whole like once a creation in Christ, the old is gone, the new has come. But the invitation is not to just have that happen one time, but the you continually live a life where it's so easy to put yourself back on the throne, right? It's so easy to put yourself back there. So, you know, you're showing up in this conversation. We're talking about Christmas and you're sort of dashing the nativity scene and saying it's not cute. It's offensive. It's, you know, terrifying. And it's actually going to call you to have to sacrifice and surrender and transform. And I would love to hear from you. Where's the hopeful invitation in that for people listening who are hearing that? And they're like, oh man, like I'm not in a place where I want to change, where I want to be contradicted, where I want to have to surrender. What's the hopeful invitation to say yes to Jesus being your king instead of you?
Okay. So this might feel a little disjointed starting here, but just as a summary statement and then getting into that answer. So C.S. Lewis talks about this, about how Jesus is either liar, lunatic, or Lord. You gotta pick. So if he's a liar, Christianity is the best bad joke of human history that's ever been told and should be completely disregarded. He could be crazy. He claimed to be God. And then it seems like he proved it when he predicted his own death and crucifixion and subsequent resurrection And we've got hundreds of first century eyewitness accounts that are saying, yeah, I saw Jesus raised from the dead. So it seems to be he's not a liar. He's not a lunatic. And then C.S. Lewis's point is, okay, well, that means that he's got to be Lord, which means that he gets my entire life, that Christianity is either, the Christmas story is either the most important story that's ever been told and you need to give your entire life to it, or it should be completely disregarded, forgotten, and all of your listeners should do everything that they can to shut my church down, me down, you down, and you know every church in their area down, because we're leading collectively thousands and tens of thousands and even millions of people astray. And so there is this weight to that, but like, okay, how we've been taught to think and to view the world around us is flawed when we come to the teachings of the Bible. Now, here's what I also love about the Christmas story, Willow, to your point, that when we see Jesus, I think it's the easiest thing to surrender your life to him. So, I mean, we can go through, what does it say he's going to be called in Isaiah 9? Like, we've got the son that's being born to us. Right. And he's the wonderful counselor. This is who he is. This is his character. This is his nature. He's the mighty God. He's the Prince of Peace. I mean, we have so much, you know, this, we just in the United States, we just went through this election cycle and still, you know, navigating through, and regardless of where people land on the political spectrum or where they're at in the nations of the earth, everybody's felt by these election cycles in the United States. It's a season of outrage and anxiety and fear and uncertainty. And when we get to the person in the work of Jesus, what is he called? He's called Prince of Peace. I mean, like, you have, why do I around every Christmas get up and tell any amazing person who's willing to show up to my church that, look, you need Jesus. The gospel is true. It's for you. And why do I do that with incredible joy? It's because people are looking for peace. We got so much chaos and anxiety going on in the world around us. And Jesus is a ruler that gives true and lasting peace. And we're the ones in relationship with him that get to experience his nature. These aren't just ideas, by the way, in Isaiah 9. I think that's important to mention, Willow. Like when Isaiah is speaking under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, saying this is his name, this is his, and our culture names don't mean a lot, right? My wife is my best friend. I love her so much. And she's like your classic Christian mom. Like we're gonna come up with the most trendy names possible for our kids, you know? And just like, you know, one of them is Willow. Actually, it's a great name.
No way. It's a cool tree. Are you serious? Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. Thank you for naming one of your children after me.
It's a beautiful name. It's a beautiful name. Funny. Yeah. And you're the name holder. So we got Asher, we got Lena, and it's very much like, what is nobody naming their kids? So we're going to do that thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And we try to go for the trendy, cool names, but it doesn't mean anything for us. And of course, in Jesus's day, when the Bible was being written, before that, even in the book of Isaiah, 700 years before Jesus, names meant something. It was either a prophetic declaration over the life of the child. It was significant to their calling. It was a marker of the season of life for the parents. It was very significant. And within a name carries character and nature. And so here's what we're finding out. These aren't just nice ideas, that through the Christmas story, we get to experience God as wonderful counselor. I mean, that's amazing. The word wonderful right there, it carries undertones of miraculous, wonder-working power. I've experienced that in my life. I'm sure you have as well, where it's like I'm distraught, discouraged, beside myself. I'm looking for hope. And then you sit with God in the scriptures and just he speaks to you so clear. And you just feel that heaviness, that doubt, that discouragement break. This is our inheritance as followers of Jesus, as we get to experience him in these ways. Everlasting Father. My kids get to call me Dad, and they're the only ones in the world that get to do that. And I'm so grateful. I love all of my kids. They're so wonderful. And it's an amazing moment when your children find out that your name isn't actually Dad or Mom, right? Do you remember that, Willow?
That's funny. I don't remember that.
So this is probably a couple of years ago where my son figured out that my name was Taylor, right? And he was messing around doing something he shouldn't have been doing. And so I looked at him like, sure, you know, kind of dad voiced him. And then he looks at me and he's got a good amount of my personality in him. And he looks at me and he's like, Taylor, you know, like, that's not cool, dude. We're not, I am Dad. Right. That's not how this is going to work. But I love hearing my kids say my name. You know, I'll go to my daughter, Lena, and she's the most adorable thing. And hey, baby, what's my name? You're Daddy. And my heart just melts. And it's speaking to my relationship that is unique to them, but also what they can expect about being in relationship with me as their dad, that I'm going to provide for them. I'm going to care for them, protect them, serve them, love them, put them ahead of myself. They know, I'll tell my kids all the time, who loves you more than anybody in the whole world? You do, Dad. You know, like, who wants you to succeed in life more than anybody in the world? You do, Dad. You know, even in moments of like discipline and correction, we always start there. Who loves you more than anybody? You do, right? And so it's not only just a name, just an idea. It's this is how they get to relate to me and their expected experience of being in relationship with me. And this is what Isaiah is getting at here. We get to experience God in this way. He is the wonderful counselor. So I would just say to your listeners, are you in need of counsel? I think we all are. The Christmas season is emotions on steroids, right? The good gets better. You know what I mean?
It is. Oh, I know what you mean.
And the bad gets worse. And we've got Jesus available to us as a wonderful counselor. He's got peace for us. Mighty God. I mean, you need some power in your life. Where do you need power in your own heart, in your own soul, in your own marriage, in your own family? And God is a father, an everlasting father, in the words of Isaiah. And so this isn't just a, that's a cute thought, right? But this is laying out expectation of relational experience that I have access to because of what Jesus has done in the incarnation, the Christmas story.
If you love Collide or have been impacted by our work, then we'd love to partner with you. We rely on the generous support of our donors to fuel the life-changing work we do to create spaces for women to collide with Jesus. You can join the movement by becoming a monthly donor or making a one-time donation. Give online at wecollide.net/give or Venmo us. See the link in the show notes to give now.
Yeah, I love all of that. I'm thinking about Christmas season. I'm thinking about people. I mean, you know, you've heard of like the CEOs, the people who are like, go to church Christmas and Easter only, hear about Jesus once a year, check, check, I'll be back next year. How can we find Jesus, connect with Jesus, this God, Emmanuel, the one who is described as Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace? How can we connect with him every single day in a way that is, yeah, Christmas 365, like all year long?
Come on, Willow, because that's available, right? Like it really is. Like this is God can be known and I can have relationship with him. I remember when I first met Jesus, when I first collided with Jesus, it was what changed my life was when I realized, dude, God actually wants relationship with me. You know, like Christianity is not just I show up to church a couple times a year, Christmas and Easter, and then I just sort of grit my teeth and, you know, like try really hard in life to not screw stuff up and to be a good person. This is like, no, dude, we've been invited into relationship with God. I love the illustration, Jesus on the cross, right? His flesh is ripped open and then the curtain in the temple is torn. And the curtain in the temple, for context, was behind that curtain. This is where the Holy of Holies was. This is the very presence of God on the earth. Such a holy place, only one man once a year could get access behind the curtain to where God's manifest presence was said to be. And what happens on the cross is Jesus is being put forward as the curtain, as the veil between us and God, as his flesh is ripped open. So the curtain is torn from top to bottom, meaning this is an act of God. If you and I rip it, it's bottom to top. This is top down. And it wasn't so that God could get out. He's omnipresent. He's everywhere. It's so that we could get in, so that we could get access to the Holy of Holies, the presence of God. That's where we get to live. And I think it's such a great point. Like this isn't just a couple times a year. And this is the reality. I've been doing this for several years at this point, and attendance swells right around Christmas and right around Easter. We expect big boom attendance wise. And I honestly, this is where it's tragic to me, Willow. And this is where my tone around Christmas is always a little bit more intense, because we don't need cute. We need to recognize that this is either the most important thing and everything about my life has to change right now, or it's the dumbest thing and I need not ever consider it again. And of course, your conviction and my conviction and that of many of your listeners. I don't know why I have fireworks going off in the background. Apparently, your streaming service thought that
I
was a good word.
I don't know why either, but that was amazing.
that was Holy Spirit right
for
there.
For those
all day.
Of you listening, you can't see this, but Taylor just had fireworks exploding all around his head.
That's a sign from God right there, everybody. Get to church and stay in church. And you get to have a relationship with Jesus that's not just a couple times a year. So practically, how do we do this, right? That's your question. We've got a great tool at New Song called Doing Our Tens. I think it's awesome. I actually got this from my previous pastor. His name was Steve Mason. Amazing man. Miss him dearly. He's my mentor, spiritual father to me. He's with Jesus right now. He's having a really good day. And his idea was this: if we could just get people to read their Bibles and to pray for 20 minutes a day, that's going to change lives. And I think that's really where we begin to do the work of what Jesus says in John 15, abide in me and I in you. As the branch can't bear fruit without vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. And Jesus is saying that I'm the vine. Jesus is the vine. He's the giver and the source of life. And the vine is, or the branches are you and I. And our job is not to produce the fruit. I love that. This is so great about Christianity. It's not like try really hard to be a better person. It's you abide in Jesus. You come into a experiential, real relationship with him through the scripture, through word, through prayer, through Christian community, through church, through communion, through whatever the Christian discipline is. And he begins to transform my heart and life. So that's what I would encourage people with, is like, look, just don't just settle for that horrible vision of Christianity that I'm just going to get excited about God a couple times a year. This is day in and day out. And I think that's just a great tool. 10 minutes in the Word, start in the Gospel of John if you don't know where to start, and read 10 minutes, underline it, rip it up, you know, like make your marks on it, highlight it. Spurgeon has said, I think he said something to the effect of, a Bible that's falling apart probably belongs to a person that doesn't, that is not falling apart. So I'd encourage people to just start there. Start in John, read 10 minutes a day, get a bit of a prayer list.
That makes me feel better because I have two books that fell out of my Bible, like literally half of Genesis and part of Revelations or something. You know what's interesting? I was just talking about this the other day. So my husband and I will celebrate 26 years married here in a couple months, right? So we've been together for close to 28 years. I'll tell you, if I only hung out with him twice a year, I would not have a relationship. And even like, let's break it down. Like if I only connected with him once a month, and I don't mean to suggest like the only time we can connect with Jesus is at church, but because, you know, there's so many other ways and times. He's everywhere. Mm-hmm. We can connect with him on a mountain when we're skiing. We can connect with him in a canoe on a lake. We can connect with him on the couch in the living room, right? Like we can connect with Jesus everywhere. But if truly God, Emmanuel, is offering us relationship, the level within which we're engaging that relationship, if we did that with another human, it would not be a relationship, right? Like if I only check in with my husband on occasion, or I do all the talking, or I only go to him when I need something, or I don't talk and I just listen all the time. You know what I mean? Like it's weird how we engage relationship with God in such a almost like unhealthy, dysfunctional way. And I don't mean that to put like a guilt or a shame on us, but more an invitation, like, man, I get to go be with God. Like I get to go for a walk on a trail with the gorgeous fall leaves and be mindful that God is there with me and I can walk with him. I can listen to him. I can talk to him. I can remind myself the things he says are true. Like I get to be with him wherever I go. So can you talk to us a little bit about that? Because I think it's an interesting thing that people either just like, yeah, I check in with Jesus once or twice a year, or like once a month, or how does that sort of degrade the idea of a relationship with Jesus into something completely different than an actual relationship?
So the question of like the practicals of like, how do we actually live into a relationship with Jesus that's transformational? I think the couple of thoughts that come to my mind right away, Willow, I think we tend to, in our church culture, in, you know, Western culture in particular, we tend to have this vision of God that it's more in alignment with deism than it is anything that the biblical writers had in view. And deism is this worldview that says that God exists, and he's the uncaused cause, that he sort of created everything and just kind of backed off and is allowing human history to carry forward with whatever course it's going to take based on, you know, humanity's engagement with it. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of Christians have that view of God, that, you know, he's deistic in nature, that he's sort of way out there, and I've got to work my way to him. I've got to try really hard. I've got to pray X amount of hours. I've got to read, you know, X amount of chapters in the Bible, and then I can feel like I'm close to God. But that is completely antithetical to the gospel. The gospel is not about what I do to work to God. It's about what God has done to work to me. So it reminds me of a quote by, I believe it's Dr. Tony Evans, that he said something to the effect of, you know, you can, the question is, do I need to go to church basically to be a Christian? And he retorts to that by saying, you know, like if I don't go home frequently, that doesn't mean I'm not married to my wife. but that is going to directly affect my relationship with my wife. And in the same way, it's like this relational invitation with Jesus means that we get to live into a transformational relationship with God. That's not just a couple times a year, right? Like this is, I get to live into a relationship with him that's transformational all the time.
Yeah, totally. Taylor, when you think about people listening right now who have pushed God away, or they thought they had to prove themselves to come near to him, or they've been hurt by the church and all the division happening, and they're just feeling done with all of it. But they have a genuine hunger right now to experience the counsel of God, the might of God, the fatherhood of God, and the peace of God. What's your invitation to them today?
Oh, man. Well, you mentioned church hurt. Can I lean in there for a second?
Totally.
So I think that it's because you're totally right. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, Will, because I think that that can be a barrier for people. In fact, if you talk to people today, you know, are you a Christian? No, why? Because Christians are hypocrites. This is a big barrier for people. Did you go to church? Yes, I did. Why don't you? It's because Christians are hypocrites. Okay, well, let's talk about that for a second. Church hurt is the idea. What I always want to tell people is that as far as church hurt is concerned, nobody's ever been hurt by the church like Jesus has, right? And yet he continues to pursue us. He continues to move in, and he continues to work in the midst of his people, even in the midst of our brokenness and our issues, our fallenness, our flawedness. And so I don't like that as a barrier for people. And I think that we just need to recognize that Jesus understands church hurt, and he's actually been hurt by the church more than anybody else. And I would say, in addition to that, your soul is not meant to carry unforgiveness. I've heard it said by one theologian, I believe it was Daryl Johnson, that bitterness, what it is like soul rot. So a lot of times when we're talking about these areas where it's like, I want to feel God's comfort, I want to experience his counsel, I want a relationship with Jesus, the barrier is actually, I am actually being more discipled by church hurt or my own bitterness, my own forgiveness, than I am of Jesus. And what I would say is that if you don't allow Jesus to disciple your bitterness is going to disciple you. If you don't allow Jesus to disciple your church hurt is going to disciple you. And all of those become areas of like a fencing between me actually being able to receive all that God wants to bring to me in my life. So if we're speaking to somebody who wants to experience more of God's presence and they're not, I want to do some work as to, okay, what is that? Is that unforgiveness? Is there bitterness here? Is there, if you removed yourself, because I think this is what God often, what happens is that I'm not removing myself from God's presence. God isn't removing himself from me. I'm actually removing myself from him. I'm choosing to live in a way that he just can't put his hand of blessing on. So I want to call people back to surrender, trusting Jesus, and experiencing all that he has for us in this amazing season called Christmas, where we get to celebrate the gospel and what God has done in redemptive history and how that carries forward in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly think that so often we collide with other wounded people. And if that's within the church, it's so easy to project that pain and those wounds onto Jesus. And I think you're inviting us to remember that Jesus understands those wounds too. So there's a compassion and a grace there, but also an invitation to remember that he's not broken people. He's perfect and good and holy and wants to heal us and wants to still be in relationship with us. And so we're blessed that we have this God, this Emmanuel, who wants to be with us every day, all day, 365 days of the year, and certainly at Christmas too, but not just at Christmas. So Taylor, it was so good to have you on today. It was great just talk to you about all of this. Thank you for crashing our nativity scene and inviting us into something more challenging. I appreciate you.
Yeah, so good to hang, Willow. Love you guys. Love what you're doing. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, for sure. Friend, I know that that gave you a lot to think about this Christmas. One of the things that Taylor said was that with Jesus, the guessing game is out on what God is like. And I love that idea. I don't know about you, but when I collide with Jesus, when I look at his life in the New Testament, the more that I look at him and take my eyes off of other humans, my eyes off of people in the church and Christians who are being dumb and broken people who've wounded me, the more I take my eyes off of them and I look at who Jesus reveals himself to be, I see in the New Testament one who would stick up for people who are being bullied, one who would feed the poor, one who would touch the lepers, one who would heal the sick, one who would show up and make sure that every single person he ran into matters. And so today, God Emmanuel, the one who's with us, he wants to show up to you today, now, in this season. And he wants you to know that you matter. And he does have counsel for you. And he does have power for you. And he does have fatherhood for you. And he does have peace for you. He loves you. And he's waiting to be in relationship with you. So my challenge for you today is to think about how you're engaging relationship with him. Do you long for him? Are you hungry for him? Do you want to talk to him? Do you want to hear from him? What are you doing to connect with the one that you long to run into? So friend, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Love ya. Catch you next week. Keep colliding.